Thankfully, I wasn't recording that, but now I'm recording this, so we'll see if we can avoid any brain farts for the next 20 minutes or so. Visuddhi is a word that the Buddha used often to describe his path, and it means purification. He used other terms about the path to liberation, the path to peace, but of course to nibbana. But purification is an important concept, and when we hear it, we often bring a lot of Western baggage into the concept of purification. It's very easy to think, oh no, the Buddha is saying I've got some stain to my character. It's just like those Christians who say there's some original sin that, as Patti Smith said, Jesus died for somebody's sin but not mine. What's going on here? I didn't do anything. I'm innocent. and of course, you know, in fact, this idea that we've got some core identity that's got some stain or blemish, or there's something deeply wrong with us that's endemic and very core to our personality, falls into very Western outlooks. From the earliest age, we're tabulated and kept track of, and in schools, we're identified not by the things that make us resemble other people, our skills that are normative, but in fact, we're identified by the things we do better than everybody else and the things that we do worse than everybody else. Your son is very good in math, but he's very poor in English. So there's this fixation that we have on how can I separate myself from others and what's unique and core and different about this identity that I'm carrying around. What's this? I feel there's something missing in my life. There must be something wrong with me. So, of course, under investigation from any real learned or adult or wizened perspective, this notion that there's something wrong, that there's some stain, that there's some core personality that we've got that's got a flaw to it, falls away. It's actually a naive conclusion. There is nothing at the core of us, at the core of our personality, that is wrong. If you look at it from the perspective of sociology or psychology or neuroscience, this idea that we've got this lasting thing that could go wrong is a fundamentally flawed outlook. Sociologists show us that we all interface with different groups of people, and in these different groups of people, our personality undergoes change. If I'm hanging around with my friends, I'm a different person than I am with my family, the way I think and talk, etc. And if we study clinical psychology, we know just how easy it is to influence people's thoughts, and just also how off target and off base people's assumptions about themselves can be. How prone we are to explain our behaviors in a way that actually are in no way close to the truth. For example, you can, as I've talked about before, you can show people an image very fleetingly, and then a little time later you show them a group of images and ask them which image do they like the most, and they'll point to the image that they were shown previously subliminally quickly. They won't know why they like that image, and you say, well, why did you like this image? And they'll come up with these amazing explanations. Well, it's more abstract, it's beautiful, I like that, the look of it, it's got a color I like. Nobody ever knows that it's simply because we've seen the image before that makes us gravitate towards it. That's the nature of the mind. It gravitates to what it's experienced safely previously. So neuroscience shows that when we look at fMRI scans of the mind, there's no part of the mind that's always switched on. There's no place where a core personality resides. Personality, the idea of identity, is simply an effect of different subsystems of the brain switching on and off, and we experience ourselves as having something that's consistent, something that's identifiable, but really all we're experiencing is a bunch of tendencies and habits. But there is no constant underlying little part in the mind that's always there, this little watcher going, oh, okay, I'm in the mind viewing all the movies that are being shown to me of the outside world and all these memories and stuff. There is no viewer in the mind. There is no core thing observing our life. There's different parts, and all these different parts have different effects and different concerns and different goals and responsibilities to keeping us alive. It's just an illusion, this idea that there's something identifiably us. The Buddha, of course, got there first. The Buddha said in his famous teaching, the Anathalakana, that if you really closely observe your thoughts over a period of time, and your body, and your feelings, and your perceptions, and your sense consciousness, and any place you look for a lasting identity or a self, or who am I? Everywhere we look, we're just going to experience change and things that are beyond our control. We're never going to find that one thing that is truly, lastingly me. What we're experiencing on a moment-by-moment level, or experience, is what's known as karma. Every moment, we experience vipaka, we're experiencing the results of our previous thoughts and actions. What those arise as is feelings in the body, that's incoming karma, and thoughts that suddenly pop into our mind out of the blue, which happens to me about half of every given moment. And we're experiencing perceptions occasionally that are the result of karma. So those are things that are the result of the way we lived our life, thought, our actions in the past. And then we also have in the present moment the way we react to all this stuff that's arising. We have this sense of aversion. Oh no, I'm thinking about this person again. Or oh no, I'm worrying about that. Or oh great, I'm feeling calm again. So we have the past coming in and our present reaction to the past and all the stuff that's arising. And this reaction that we have, the way we react, creates future mind states. So I'll give you an idea. If I've been busy and frantic and running around all day long, and then I sit down in my meditation and my brain is really addled and jumpy, that energy is karma, or the result of the way I've experienced my day, the way I've interacted with my day. It's been running around. It's not been taking any time to find peace. I've been charging through life. So when I settle down, all this momentum comes in flooding into the mind. All these thoughts pop in, and this worry, and this energy in the body. And that's karma coming in. That's what vipaka. And then I react to it. I can go, oh, okay, this is totally normal. I've been really hectic, so I should expect this. And if I react that way, that sense of calmness and contentment, or that sense of non-judgment, will create a much more peaceful mind state in the future. But if I react to the fact that my mind is jumpy by going, oh shit, I suck at this meditation, why did I even bother coming here? I should have just gone home. I don't know why I even bothered, you know, practicing. Then I'm adding more and more jumpiness and judgment and aversion to my future life. The way I use my mind right now creates what will frame the mind in the future. So any thought I develop right now or give energy to right now, I'm going to wire into the brain to occur again in the future. And this is what neuroscientists have found, any thought we think, any action we do, wires the brain. There was a wonderful experiment where they taught people to do a scale on the piano, and then they had another group just practice a scale in their minds, and then they had a third group not practice any scale at all. And within a week, or 2 weeks, I can't remember the period of time that elapsed, but very quickly, when they did a second scan, a second MRI, I believe, they noticed that, or I think it was probably fMRI, so anyway, they noticed that larger sections of the somatosensory lobe was actually being dedicated to finger movements. The brain was rewiring itself. Not just the brain of people who were playing the piano, but people who were imagining themselves playing the piano, their brains started to rewire. So you rewire your brain not only by what you do, but by what you think. They've also shown that when people meditate over a course of a month, we axonically rewire the brain so we have more control over the fear part, the amygdala, the part that causes stress and fear. We're literally rewiring more control over the little inner fear sections of the brain. So it's very important to realize that every moment can create a different future. There is no core thing that is containing, controlling, authoring, giving us a core identity that cannot be undone. Even people who have gone through the most traumatic experiences imaginable, people who've experienced holocausts, people who've been through wars, people who've been through terrible, terrible ordeals, can actually work through panic attacks and post-traumatic stress disorders, given the right therapy and the right practice. There's nothing that we've experienced, even in that Freudian idea, which has been pretty much, while there's so many valuable things that Freud offered, this idea that there was this core experience in our childhood that completely frames us and gives us an identity that limits us, is a fantasy. There is nothing that ultimately enchains us or limits us or bounds us. If there is something that comes close to it, it's the stories about ourselves that we carry around. What the Buddha called adivada upadana, attachment to self-view, and sakkaya ditti, again, self-view. This idea, the Buddha said that we're bringing into each present experience not only preferences and worries and fears, but we're bringing in this whole story of who I am, what I'm good at, what my core truth is. It's a Tuesday. Oh, shit. I hate Tuesdays. I'm obligated to not like today. It's a Friday. I've always liked Fridays. So I'm obligated to like this day no matter what happens. We bring this bias, this predisposition to everything. Oh, I don't like this kind of person. This person likes jazz fusion. I can't stand that music. I can't possibly like this party. I don't like parties. I can't believe I'm forced to go to this holiday party. I can't believe I have to endure this insult at work. I'm above this. That's not who I am. I've achieved all this stuff. Why are you asking me to do this? Don't you know who I am? Yeah. All this storytelling that we bring into each moment, each experience, it's not something that gives us liberation. It's not something that gives us freedom. It's something that not only taints and biases and filters each moment, but it keeps us in chain to do what we've always done in the past. This idea of, oh, that's right, I'm depressed. I'm a depressed person. I have to be depressed today. I'm an angry person. My favorite call by that person who used to call me and say, I'm an angry person. I'm an angry guy. Me and my anger. I don't know, there's no song called that, but I just sang it anyway. You know. This is me and my anger. I'm flawed, me and my fear. This is who I am. So the moment in life when we're not frightened or we're not angry, I guess that doesn't count. I would ask him, are you angry right now? Are you angry with me? No, I'm not angry. I'm talking to you. I'm always okay when I'm talking to you. Well, then you're not an angry person. If you are an angry person, that's core through your identity. That would be here now. If you're somebody who experiences anger, you're just somebody who's capable of it. You might even have a tendency to be angry, but that sentence, I have a tendency to be angry or fearful, is a big difference than walking around with this idea of, I'm an angry person, I'm a fearful person. The moment we add in, I have a tendency, or maybe I have a habit, we open ourselves up to the possibility that we can change. And this idea that there isn't anything, any stain that needs to be removed, any core thing that we're stuck with, any taint. Once we begin to open to that possibility, each moment becomes a possible moment towards liberation, because we have a freedom to choose exactly how we think would be the most skillful, happy, calm, content way to act. We're not carrying around all the stuff of I'm a victim. I've been tormented. I've been abandoned. We're not obligated to carry these stories around with us. They don't explain life. What they do is limit life. Now, often when I talk about this important offering of the Buddha, people say, well, I'm an alcoholic. And I need to remember that, or else I'll drink. So the idea is, unless we raise something up to the level of identity, we're going to fall victim to it again. I would counter that. I would say that if I'm allergic to raspberries, I don't eat fucking raspberries. And I like to let, I can't drink, but I can't eat raspberries, thank heaven. But I mean, the idea that I have to turn this thing that I can't do into a statement about my core identity doesn't create liberation. It doesn't create even a sense of purpose or security. People then use it as a way to, very often when they have this identity, say, in being an alcoholic, then they refer to other people as normal people. So suddenly, it's not, we're abnormal. Suddenly we're this, we're separate, we're apart, we can't relate, we're different, there's something unique, there's the stain again. Again, it's very easy and very possible to avoid doing things without turning them into this identity, this core belief about me that I have to bring into every moment of my life. So it's not, I think, anywhere we look at identity making and attachment to this idea that we have to have this view of ourselves, who we are, what we're best at, what we're incapable of. I'm not good at skiing. I'm not good at athletics. I'm very good, though, at puzzles. All we're doing in that is creating this life free of any possibility that we're going to move into the areas that challenge us. So even with people who find identity around things that are positive, very often people who are musicians or songwriters or artists say, that's my identity, that's who I am. I feel good about that. But actually, over time, it's very clear how limiting this becomes. I've heard musicians say, wow, I wish I didn't cling to this idea, that's who I am, because I walled off myself to so many other opportunities. I could have said, I'm good at music, but the moment I made it into I am this, immediately it became this obligation, this responsibility, this way that I would filter all my interactions. So the thing that we're purifying ourselves from is not any stain. We're purifying ourselves from the stories we carry around about ourselves. That's what we purify. That's what we let go of. That's what the path helps us do. This need to constantly filter every moment in terms of this inner biography. This is what we can experience a liberation from. Each moment can be purified, so rather than saying, what do I do in this situation? What have I always done? We can simply say, well, what have I seen to be skillful? And if I haven't seen anything to be skillful, I have the opening then to experiment. As the Buddha said, don't believe what you're told, what you've heard is the right thing, or what people have rewarded you for. Believe what you've seen to be true and skillful yourself through your own experience, through your own eyes. Even your views of what you are, you can let go of. Each moment can be a moment that opens to endless possibilities. So that's all I've got to say on that topic. I thank you for listening. I hope there was something that was worthwhile in there. And now it's your turn to ask any questions or any comments or thoughts or anything about the spiritual path that you'd like to know about. I encourage you to ask. So thank you for listening.